This podcast is part of Podcast One Sportsnet.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. Ira Weintraub here once again with Coach Jim Harbaugh. Coach Jack Harbaugh is back from the NFL spring meetings in Arizona. Director of Recruiting Matt Dudek is here, and our producer McKenzie is here as well. No lucky sports parents this week, but instead we're going to have a draft preview with former Michigan tight end Zach Gentry is going to join us here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. And of course, with the return of Jack, that's the return of Jack Talk. There's no Wally Pipping going on. Jack is back, and we're excited for another Jack Talk here on the show. A reminder, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen via the Podcast One app or on podcastone.com. And please follow us and contact us on Twitter at AED Podcast or using hashtag Jack Talk. Welcome back, Jack.
So good to be back today. I know the program tomorrow will be, tomorrow is Tuesday, right? Today is Monday.
Got a bit of a tan, too. I want to point
thank
that
you.
Out.
And look at here. We're out there in short sleeves at the baseball and the porn. Look at my arms, how nice and tan they are.
Crispy.
I needed that when I saw that snow. When was that? Yesterday? No. We saw the snow. Today, April 1st, April Fool's Day. Whose birthday? April. Why do I got all these hands going up?
Yeah. A lot of hands going up.
Jim, your first. Her first birthday.
Well, I know everybody's going to...
There are two.
There's actually three. There's Bob Ufer and Bo Schembechler.
Yep, 99 and 90 would have been...
And Terrell Burton.
Sue Burton.
Oh, Sue Burton. I thought it was Terrell's birthday.
No, it's Sue's birthday.
Sue Burton.
On April 1st. And, drum roll...
Joseph Sapiti. C-I-P-I-T-I, the father of Jackie Harbaugh.
It's a big day.
April 1st. Big, big day. We used to have a little get-together for Bo and Sue and... Bob Ufer, a big party to celebrate April 1st. Bo would stick around for about 20 minutes to say hello to everybody. He got his car and went home and allowed us to enjoy them. I just got to tell you about breakfast this morning. Breakfast with Jackie. We kid each other. We're sitting along the big table, Jim, right? I'm at the one end, and she seems like she's a county away at the other end of the table. And I just shout out, Jackie, I think I know what I'm going to do next in my career. I'm going to go out and I'm going to apply for a high school coaching job here close to Ann Arbor where I can coach high school football. It's time for me to make a comeback. And she just rolled her eyes and it really started to laugh, you know, like I was only kind of joking. And I said, well, Jackie, don't, before you get all concerned, let me just tell you that I want you to be on the staff. I want you to be the offensive coordinator of the team that I'm going to coach. And this would be revolutionary. You know, bring a husband and wife onto the staff, mm-hmm. and we're coaching together. And she goes, I don't want anything to do with it. Another one of your crazy things that you're going with. I said, no, I'm serious. And there'll be a press conference, you know, and I'm going to announce you as the offensive coordinator. And there's going to be a question on what kind of offense that you're going to run. Mm-hmm. All at once, her mood totally changed. She said, well, the first thing that I would say, and I see you laughing because you get to see her, can't you? Well, the first thing I would say would be I would have to study the team, find out what talent we had, whether we could throw the ball or maybe run the option or something like that. That would be the first thing I would do. And then the other thing I would say is, hold on a second. I'm not about to tell you the kind of offense we're going to run because I don't want to give the opponent an idea before the first game on what kind of she was serious.
Masterful coach speak right there. Masterful.
And I thought to myself, I think she would go for it.
She's on to something.
I had a great morning.
And then at what point did you say April Fool's?
Way ahead of me, Ira. Way ahead of me.
So that was apparently not the only April Fool's pranks going on this morning. Mr. Dudek, you like to have a lot of fun at the expense of your kids.
Yeah, I love messing around with my girls. This morning, I woke them up. I set it up last night a little bit, mentioned like, boy, we're supposed to get some snow again. You know, wouldn't it be awesome if you had another snow day at the end of spring break and an extra day? So I went in with my cell phone and filmed them waking up going, girls, I got a surprise for you. Snow day. And so the twins were cheering. They were running around. And then we go into Abby, the 10-year-old's room, and Juliana comes burling in going, Abby, snow day. And out of a dead sleep, she rolls over and goes, "It's April Fool's," and then rolls back over. So it was good.
She's on to you.
Yeah, she is very much on to me. I can still get the twins for a little while longer.
Well done, though. Thank you. Good attempt. So I thought of you guys over the weekend. It was a few days ago, actually. I saw a tweet. It was tweeted out, and the quote, it screams Harbaugh family. The tweet says, "Destroy your distractions today with determination to dominate. Go get it, whatever your it is." And that tweet came from Tom Crean. So it makes perfect sense that he fits right into the family with some great sayings of how to, whether attacking the day or putting distractions behind you. It's a pretty good quote that you probably, whether you use it or not, it's something that you guys still live by. So, unless he got it from you.
Tom is masterful. Now he reads, and he every day he comes up with something that's motivational. And the masterful thing is that he speaks to his team. You know, he doesn't speak to the fan base. I don't think he doesn't fake or speak to the press or the media. He really speaks to his team, and I think the team is locked into that. And he does, you know, a really good job of that.
It was a good quote. As I said, I definitely thought Harbaugh's when I read that one from Coach Crean. So, Coach Harbaugh, another week of spring ball in the books. How have things been the last week?
Good. Been really competitive. Guys are in great shape. They're moving around good all practice, and that's been the case every single practice. We have seven in the books right now, and the guys will next practice will be on Friday, and then Fan Fest on Saturday, and then a Sunday practice. Where would you like me to go with it? I mean, there's guys that are really stepping up. People always like to know who the new guys are that are really doing well. And I would have to say that Donovan Jeter continues to cement his spot and his role, and keeps going the way he's going. I mean, he's going to be definitely a starter for us. The other newcomer is Mike Sandersill. He's on his way to cementing a spot in the starting lineup as well, doing a fantastic job at all the receiver positions.
You're on a roll. I like hearing, and you're right, fans, we like to hear the new names.
They like to hear new names.
In particular, yeah, to hear a freshman come in and have that kind of an impact in just seven practices.
He's really been outstanding. And it's not just, he's getting open. He's fast. He's added a level of speed and quickness to our offense that has been outstanding. Josh talks about speed and space, and that's Mikey's doing a heck of a job in that area. And also blocking. I mean, there's been times where it showed up where he's blocking 40, 45 yards downfield and getting touchdown blocks. He's really done great, and continue to learn the offense, learn football, you know, get the time on task. That's really, you know, the place that he can most improve his game. But really happy with Mike Sanders still.
Question on that real quick, because, you know, you hear people ask about receivers. It's kind of like asking about running backs. No one ever really talks about, well, how is he in blocking, you know, pass coverage. With receivers, oh, he's big target, he gets open, does this. But you jumped after, mentioned that briefly. You went right to the blocking part. How important is that, in addition to the other part of it, to get on the field that you can block to help sustain and get those longer runs because you're doing things on the outside?
If you don't have the ball, then you become a blocker. Even a quarterback who, if he doesn't have the ball, you know, he's trying to fake and pull a defender away from the ball carrier. And receivers, if they don't have the ball, then they become a blocker, whether it's in the run game or the passing game. And you may only have a couple, you have five or six targets a game. You may get the ball thrown to you that many times. You may have two or three catches, and that shows up on the stat sheet. But, you know, if receivers aren't involved in the blocking and the, you know, running their route, whether it's on the front side or the back side, then they could probably go through the game and not even get their gray t-shirt sweated. But there's a lot of ways to play all the plays when you're a receiver, and that's running every single route and blocking on the running plays. And he is showing up as a guy, you know, second and third effort that's doing a heck of a job.
I the theory about receivers, and, you know, we have some receivers in the NFL and receivers that kind of call attention to themselves. You know, we don't go into names, but we call attention to themselves. And I really think it's boredom. I really do. It's there'll be like, even in the pro game, there's be six or seven balls thrown to a receiver in a game. You know, he'll catch maybe four or five, you know, some down the field, maybe more, maybe seven, eight. Sometimes he'll catch the ball and run out of bounds where there's no contact. So there's probably only about four or five times that there's going to be contact initiated on a receiver. And he really gets, if he's not blocking and he's not doing other things to help the team, he gets bored. And then they find creative ways to, for celebrations and for ways to call the attention to themselves. So the way that Jim's talking about is get involved in blocking. Then you don't have time for that other stuff.
And I do like hearing the physicality of a freshman. A lot of times you would think an 18-year-old comes in. He may not even be 18 yet if you're an early enrollee. But to be right in there doing the physical stuff through the early part of camp is always good to hear.
Is he a return guy too, Jim?
Yes. Yes. He's going to do he's definitely going to do punt returns and he's in the rotation at kick returner as well. I mean, he's already up to number two on the depth chart as a punt returner, and he's number four kickoff returner right now. So he's doing great things. Sean McCune is really gotten to be elite as a tight end in his blocking and his route running. The new guy on the scene, that tight end, is Eric All doing an unbelievably great job. Doesn't always know what he's doing, but you know, he's always doing it full speed. You love that. Also, Schoonmaker, Muhammad, and Eubanks are all progressing really well. Nick Eubanks and Sean are the two starting tight ends, and then Mustafa's in a backup role right now. But he's doing some really good things. He's had some excellent practices, and then you know, he's had a practice where maybe he wasn't as involved, and so when he gets that consistently good, you know, he's definitely going to be a good factor on our team. So I like the way those guys are coming along. Defensive line, I know I've talked a lot about Jeter. Aiden Hutchinson is no surprise doing has stepped up his game. He played in all games last year and started two or three games. He is starting at the anchor position right now and doing fabulous. So is Quiddy Pay. He's starting at defensive end. Jeter at the three technique. We talked about him. Carlo Kemp is our starting nose right now and doing a fabulous job. And feel really good about that front right now. It's starting to cement and you're starting to know who the starters are there. And a guy to mention is Luigi Villian, who's hasn't played any football for the last 2 years. He's missed his freshman and sophomore year due to injury, but he is now in the two deep. He is backing up Quiddy. Mozzie Smith is backing up Carlo Kemp. So Mozzie's come onto the scene and doing a great job. There's good battles at the linebacker position for the starting roles. Ross and Anthony at the Mike backer, and McGrone and Gil and McGrone, Ross and Anthony, they're all in there and battling and doing well. So, Kalik still the head and shoulder Viper. Glasgow is playing all positions, Viper, Will, and Mike, and doing a great job. Uche solidly cemented in there as the Sam backer. Cornerback, newcomer category, Vince Gray is starting right now at left corner, doing a fabulous job. Ambry Thomas is starting at the right corner. Brad Hawkins has found himself a starting role as the nickel, and Metellus and Woods are cemented in there at the safety. So things are becoming, the picture's becoming clearer and through seven practices. And we forge on.
You know, it's an interesting thing in spring practice like this. You lose some players and they go, and then they come out, and you see these guys that were kind of below the radar, under the radar, and then all at once with an opening, you know, it's like a racehorse. He's coming down the backstretch, and the horses kind of part a little bit. He sees an opening, and he makes a burst for it. And some of the guys you've described, I think you could describe that way. They see a little opportunity,
they see an opening.
Now, and they are going to take it.
Yeah, they're great examples. Ben Mason is backing up Jeter. I mean, he's in that rotation, that starting type of rotation at three technique. He's also starting at this hybrid running back tight end position that we have on the team. And the other guy that has really seen a crack of light and is just running through it literally is Ben Van Sommeren at the running back position. He's showing speed. He's showing a cutting ability that we didn't foresee as well. The lightness on his feet to be able to stop, start, get back up to full speed, and And then also the finish. I mean, he has the ability to finish through the soft shoulder. Jack Harbaugh.
Put a smile on my face.
You know what? Come out the other end.
Josh and I were out in the hallway yesterday talking. You know, you get these backs, and you can block a play perfectly. I mean, the center, the guard, the tackle, the tight end can block it perfectly. And then they drop the safety down in there to that side, and you can't count for him. So about 3 or 4 yards off the line of scrimmage, here comes the safety, you know, this guy. And you look for the soft shoulder. You try to create it. You'll make a little move to the right, get him lean in that direction. It creates a soft shoulder, and then you come back through that soft shoulder you create. This guy does not create soft shoulders. What he does, no, he doesn't look for soft, he creates them. So when that safety comes up there, I mean, he just looks at a shoulder and runs through it, and all at once it becomes a soft shoulder.
So it's just a shoulder he turns
into. He turns into. But what happens is, as the game goes on, having been a secondary coach, safety comes down there, and he'll make a tackle, and all at once you get a guy like this. Remember, Toby Gerhart was that kind of guy. About the fifth time that you come down there, and you look at it's a Sumberland or a Toby Gerhart, all at once and what they do, they stop and they let them run by you. I mean, they don't get in front of you. They let them run, and then they jump on your back, and you carry them for about 3 more yards. They become a little softer in their approach to making that tackle.
I'm really going to make your day now. I mean, I can see the smile on your face. I see the football, you know, the juices are flowing. You're watching the tape, and now I'm going to make your day. You ready?
Cool.
So last podcast, we talked about Ryan Hayes and his emergence at tackle. Another guy has emerged at tackle. Watching the practice tape of practice 6, this offensive tackle showed up 5 times in the good play cut up, and offensive coordinator Josh Gattis even pointed him out. Said, look at this guy. Who is this number 79?
Yes!
Greg Robinson. Jack Harbaugh has been pounding the table literally for 2 years for senior tackle Greg Robinson, and he has emerged.
I just want to go back to.
I stopped the meeting. I said, Josh, you got to go up to my dad and say, boy, this Greg Robinson's really having a heck of a spring. And you want to make my dad's day.
He was 2 years ago. I can recall watching practice, and at that time you were really looking for players and everything. And I kind of mentioned. I mentioned number 79, and I got a kind of a okay, you know. It wasn't any real enthusiastic thing. In fact, one day I think he did get a chance to get in there and play a little bit, and then he got hurt. I will say this. He had a couple things.
He was always kind of like just getting in there where he was about to play, and then he'd have a bit of a setback.
And I would give it the old, well, how about 79, and I would get no eye contact. Little icon, you go, okay, you know, this we're going to look at him and all that.
Talk about from Coach Drevno?
Well, maybe even a little from
names,
Coach Harbaugh.
Are you leaving the names out?
I could, but
Coach
I have to.
Not Coach Harbaugh. Not Coach Harbaugh. I've always been a fan of Greg Robinson.
So I
protecting the names, leaving the innocent.
Protect the innocent. I think he has good feet, and he has a body that can get in front of people and feet that can move a little bit.
He's playing with a lot of savvy right now.
What is he, a junior or senior?
Senior. With 2 years of eligibility, so he's got this year and next year.
Oh, I'm excited to hear that.
Did that make your day?
It did. You can tell.
What about the specialists, Coach? Haven't heard much about the kickers and the punters.
There's a real battle going on at kicker right now between Quinn Nordine and Jake Moody. And William Hart is doing an excellent job as the punter. George Karatan has a heck of a strong leg too, and the snappers are doing a real good job. Cam and Cheeseman having a very good spring, and we also have a grad transfer that'll be coming in as well.
Don't say his name.
That we're really excited about, but Matt has said I can't say his name. So that's where we're at with the specialist. Good battle going on at kicker. I mean, we're gonna have whoever the kicker is. He's gonna be we're gonna have a really good kicker, and we're gonna have a really good backup kicker as well. Hart's holding, Dylan McCaffrey's holding, and returners, Ronnie Bell is right now starting as the punt returner and the kick returner. As I said, Mike Sanders still is backing up as punt returner, and Ambry Thomas is backing up as kick returner. Oliver Martin is third punt returner. Mike Barrett is the third kick returner. And Mike Barrett's the fourth punt returner. And Mikey Sandrastil and Oliver are the fourth kick returner.
You didn't touch on the offensive line, I don't think, very much. But
we did that so much last week that...
But the one thing I like about them, they're there every day. The same guys.
That's a great point.
Same guys every day. I mean, you see them lining up there every day, whether it's snowing or whether it's sunshine or whether it's 70 degrees or whether it's 10 degrees, the same 6, 7, 8, 9, 9, just grinding play after play after play. And all that accumulates into, I think, a coordinated unit come game day.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's no question about that. And there's a magical thing, a thing that makes you feel really good about yourself as a football player when you make all 15 days of spring practice, when you're there every single day doing the things that you're talking about right now. Every single day, you're there, you're available, you're playing, you're getting better, you're practicing football. No question. I shared with the team a text that John Harbaugh sent me a couple weeks ago. He said, I read a book, and the title of the book was How to Get Good at Anything When You're a Human Being. He said, that was the title. And inside the book there, it had one word. And the one word is practice.
Ah.
So to be able to show up 15 days and make every single practice, and you are getting better at football by practicing football.
And I think your teammates really begin to trust you when they see you every day. You know, when they see whatever, you know, some days you're And it's not just showing up. It's coming there and giving that same effort every single day. It's not an up and down and sideways type thing. It's that same top your top performance every single day.
No, you're so
your
right.
Your teammates rally around you. When they see you, you're taking a day off, or they see you not, you know, not showing up. They see you over on the sideline.
There's no doubt about it. You haven't smiled in four practices, and then or you... You have that look, that sour look on your face. You know, that look on your face that looks like you've sat on the couch and perfected that over many hours to get to that sour look. You know, just...
But no group epitomizes that more than offensive linemen. I mean, they are there every single... I mean the good part of it. They're every day, and no drill off. They take no drill off. They take no practice snap off. I mean, they're there to perform, and they're going to get better, and it's going to reflect in our offensive play in the fall.
The defensive line, with the exception of one, there's been the defensive line has done the same thing. I mean, Hutchinson, Jeter, Pay, Kemp, there every single day. Mozzie Smith, Luigi Villian, Ben Mason, Dane Drabacki, there every day. Julius Welfkoff, Gabe Newberg, Joey George, been there every day. Ajabo, Upshaw, there every single day.
You use the word trust. I would say contagious, right? Because if they're working, if that guy's working that hard, I better be working that hard too. If that guy's smiling, why am I not smiling? Aren't those things also contagious, where if one guy is working that hard, that it starts to bring everybody with him too?
If your motives are pure and you're a team player and you want to make your team the best that you could possibly make it, I promise you that trust will reflect in how your teammates approach you and how they respond to you.
Before we go, we got a tweet last week. I wanted to ask you guys briefly about this, but we had asked a couple weeks ago, Matt, about the you know, what people like about the podcast or what people might want to hear more about.
And
Bryce Bam 58 tweeted, he said, love the family atmosphere and the wisdom I get from the podcast. Want to hear more on Jack's time at Western Kentucky, which we do spend a lot of time on Jack Talk, and we'll obviously continue with those. But also Jim's start at San Diego and how the coaches balance their lives while being great husbands, fathers, and friends. We haven't spent a lot of time about that first time you became a head coach. You go to San Diego. You had obviously played a lot of professional football. You played in college. You were on the staff with the Raiders. But when you got that first opportunity to be a head coach and you take that over for the first time, how many things did you learn like that you didn't know, or what things did you learn because you had never been a head coach before?
So, learned so many things. I mean, how to do so many things. How many, thousands, literally. Probably the first biggest thing that I learned was that it is all the little things, you know, all the things that people think are the small stuff or the minutia. Mm-hmm. It's a thousand little things add up to make all the difference.
Yeah.
It's not the this is the key or that's the key. It's all those little things. And going from an assistant coach or going to from a player to a coach, going from assistant coach to a head coach, thing I really learned was that you make those decisions and every decision you make affects every aspect mm-hmm. of every other thing. And you're all alone in it. And when it's all over, you are alone and you have to make that decision. And then that's the course that we are going on. And it makes you sad when people don't want to go along with that course of action, but in time you make it right.
We talk about the foundation of the team. The foundation is trust, and you reach it. I mean, you put a staff together and you're hoping magically it's all going to come together on day one, and it doesn't work that way. Day two, it doesn't. Year one, sometimes. Year two, year three, it doesn't come the way you want it until at some, again, magical point where everyone realizes that everyone is truly a head coach. I mean, when there is a policy in place and you know it's in place, you hold yourself accountable, but you hold others on the staff accountable. It isn't to the head coach's responsibility to see everything. It's not you're responsible to sit back and say, oh, Joe Jones over there, he's screwing up. Boy, I can't wait till the head coach sees this. He's going to get his tail chewed out. I take care of it. I take care of it so the head coach doesn't have to handle that. Best teams that I ever coached were the years that I found myself not having to worry about every little single detail. It was being handled by the players in the locker room, and it was handled by the coaches in their locker room. And some things did come to me, and we were able to handle it. The years that every day, 10, 15 people are walking through your office with, we got this problem, we got this problem, we got this problem, and they weren't being handled, are the years that we struggled. So that trust and building that trust is so, so important in any team, including the team that you have at home.
You find that wanes over, like you have fewer of those people coming to your door as the years go by, because you now have maybe the guys that were underclassmen when you first got here, they don't know your way. It's a new system, new coach, et cetera. But by the time they're seniors and maybe a freshman or sophomore is doing something that they can step in because they've gone through 3-4 years in the program, or does it just really depend on the year-by-year scenario?
There's really good teams where the players, they lead, and you get the ones that have the motives where they want to make Michigan great and they want to make themselves great, you know, better. There's better years, you know, than others when it comes to player leadership. But Dad's exactly right. When you have that and you have that senior-led group that's a great group, I mean, it's, you know it when you have it. But there's also an aspect of it changes every year because, you know, there are new guys that come in every single year, new coaches. College football is a new team every mm-hmm. single year. So that, I've always known that. I mean, that's kind of the job that you have as a head coach when you know that every single day between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., something's going to happen. Something is going to occur when you have that many players on your team and they have families and they have friends that something's going to occur that you're going to have to make a decision about and resolve. You know, that's another. So you try to anticipate and you resolve, but you know, you can pretty much count on just about every day between those hours something's going to come up.
Well, you're talking about 150, 18 to 23-year-old guys that have, as you said, families and friends, et cetera. And good things happen, bad things happen, but they all end up somewhere along the way probably crossing your path.
I look at our staffs back in the 70s. I mean, we had 9 full-time coaches. We had the head coach, Bo Schembecker. Then we had 2 graduate assistants on offense, 2 graduate assistants on defense. We had no recruiting coordinator, you know, strength coach we had. We had a trainer. That was about it. I mean, it was tight. I mean, you could get them into a room and sit around the table. But now in programs, I mean, it's around the table and then around the wall. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts that come into play this day and age that we didn't see in the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, there's 2 things, really. I mean, if anybody, I look at it, if they give respect, then they're going to get that respect back and then some. If they give grief, then they're going to know what hits them. As Dad was talking about earlier, though, the thing that I love about our current situation is that, take the staff, for instance, coaches, recruiting coordinator sitting right next to me here, strength coach, nutritionist, athletic director, trainers, the doctors, everywhere there are people that are competent and really good at their job. And they're go-getters, and they do their job really well. And this year, more so than any other year, as a head coach, I'm not getting thinned out in having to do, I got to do this job, and then that person's not doing that job, so I got to go do that job. And you get thinned out so much that you're not really doing the job that as well as you could when you're trying to put out fires and do different four or five different jobs at one time.
Yeah, micromanaging is not necessarily the best recipe for success because that way you can focus on your main job. So great stuff there. Really looking forward to our next part of the podcast, as this week we're going to push the lucky sports parents off for a week or two. But really looking forward to talking to Zach Gentry, who's in the NFL draft upcoming. And coach, for the first time, maybe the second time since I've been involved in the podcast anyway, been here in the air chair, that you will not be the tallest guy in the room. I think you've always been the tallest guy in the room, but it won't be when Zach Gentry walks in.
It is not you and I, Ira.
You and I have never been the tallest guy in the room unless we're with our kids and nobody else. So I like being in a room with like elementary school kids. I feel nice and tall.
Yes.
Usually the tallest guy in the room, but it won't be the case when Zach joins us next. Looking forward to talking to Zach Gentry here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes you to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need so there are no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
You're listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Make sure to stick around after this podcast to get the latest headlines from the AP News Minute.
Podcast One SportsNet is your home for the best coverage of the Final Four and this year's March Madness. Get all the play-by-plays and top-notch analysis from sportscasting gurus like Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen. Then put your bets in with betting expert RJ Bell and RJ Bell's Dream Preview, and laugh out loud with the biggest name in the game, literally, on the Big Podcast with Shaq. Download new episodes of these shows and more every week on Podcast One SportsNet.
Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Now time for our middle segment, our guest segment here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. And as I tease right now, Jim Harbaugh, for maybe the first time in the history of the podcast, is not the tallest guy in the room. That goes to Zach Gentry, 6'8", tight end here at the Michigan Wolverines, and now heading off to the NFL draft. And what a path. Let's go back. And actually, I want to go a little further back than that, because Jack, you should make the introduction, because you were just in New Mexico.
John and I were in Albuquerque, New Mexico for 2 days last week, and we had a fantastic time. Met the mayor of Albuquerque, got a great story about him that we're going to share a little bit. Went to the grill, and had a beautiful steak and a tremendous cake. The Duke City Gladiators. Have you ever had a chance to see the Duke City Gladiators play?
I haven't seen them in person, no.
Oh, but you heard about them winning the championship last year?
Yep, absolutely.
But the one name, there's one name that resurfaced, and you were second.
Okay.
But you weren't number one. Tell me about Bill.
Oh man, my grandpa.
Ah, your grandpa.
Yeah. He's kind of a legend in the state, you know. I mean, first of all, he's probably my biggest hero growing up. He grew up West Texas, Dust Bowl, Great Depression era, on a cotton farm, and didn't own a toothbrush until he was in the Navy. You know, and so he really just overcame, I mean, a lot of hard stuff that life had to, you know, that life dealt him. So, I mean, yeah, he did a lot of different things, but long time high school football coach.
How many years did he coach, Zach?
He would have ended up coaching 40 plus years, something like that.
And he truly is a legend. We went to the grill for that, and everybody came up and wanted to talk about you and your career, and so complimentary. But they had a story about your grandpa. Bob Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was enthusiastic coach, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, the old way of doing things.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Kind of tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a handful of stories back in the day. I mean, first of all, I mean, now he's still alive. 93, going to be 94 in September. But you know, he was just an old school coach. You know, my dad.
Get right in your grill, right?
Oh yeah, you're right in your face. You know, like a lot of people told me that they would they'd end up with some red man on their face or something. You know, after he was, but yeah, he was a legend. And like I said, I look up to him more than probably anybody else.
And somebody said that there was a book written about him. Am I wrong on that, or is that a possibility?
He actually wrote a couple books on the Delaware Wing Tee. He was like a big fanatic of that in the 70s. So yeah, he wrote a couple books on that.
That's a cult now. Mm-hmm. The Wing Tee people they have their own little clinic, and no one's allowed to come unless they run the Wing Tee.
Yeah.
They write their own little book. Delaware, the Delaware Wing Tee is where it all came from, with Davy Nelson, a Michigan man, put that in Delaware. So I didn't realize that was what the books were about.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
What's it going to be like for him come later this month when his grandson is going to be taking that next step to the National Football League?
I don't know. You know, I'm going to go back home for the draft. It's going to be awesome to be around him and the rest of my family. You know, he's getting up there. They're living in a retirement home now. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to spending time with him, and hopefully it'll be a little surreal, because I wanted to make sure that was always one of my goals, was for him to see me get to play at the highest level.
So let's go back. We talked obviously about your grandfather here, but growing up playing football in New Mexico, it's not the hotbed of football as maybe Texas. You mentioned that a little bit earlier with your grandfather. What was it like playing? What was the football like when you were growing up playing in high school? What was that level like?
It was super competitive. There were some teams on the west side of town that weren't in the Albuquerque public school system, so they had a little different rules. They had a lot of students, and so there were a ton of schools in Albuquerque, and so there was just kind of like a clash of eastern and western sides of Albuquerque and Rio Rancho. The southern schools were traditionally really good when I was growing up, and I think it's far more competitive than people realize it is. Don't have the sheer numbers like a Texas does, but I think it's good football.
And you had a brother that played.
My brother.
4 years older?
He's 3 years older.
3 years older.
3 years older, yeah. I played receiver for him when he was the quarterback my freshman year. He played at the University of New Mexico for 5 years. And
he became a tight end as well.
Yeah, he did. Tight end, punted a little bit. He held.
That's right.
So, yeah, just a lot of football in the family.
The one thing you forget, having been down there, is there's about a million people.
Oh yeah,
in the Albuquerque, that surprised me, that you think of New Mexico as being a small state, but to have a million people in one city was staggering for me.
Oh yeah, for sure. I get that question all the time. I think a lot of people, when I tell them I grew up in New Mexico, they think of like some dusty town with a tumbleweed and a couple horses.
Yeah,
but I mean, the Albuquerque metro area is spread out. Yeah, it's big,
very much spread out.
Big area.
Of course, the Lobos are there. In town, right?
Yeah, they're in Albuquerque.
Well, one time I was just interject this off topic, but kind of on topic. When I was coaching at Stanford, I had lunch with John Ralston a few times. It covered many topics, a lot of different topics. But one thing he said that was profound, I thought, was a population of a million people will produce 16 Division I football players on average. That was his number. So a million people in Albuquerque should have about 16 Division I players playing.
Sounds about right.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah, it does, actually.
And you're obviously in your class, you were one of those. We've had a few guys from Mexico come through here in the past. One of them
his major point, by the way, was, let me get to the punchline,
there's talent there.
Yeah, well, and Los Angeles was his, when he was talking to me at the time, he was saying Los Angeles has 16 million people, Jim.
So you're doing
16
million times 16.
I have no idea. The answer is no idea what the number is.
Big 96.
Thank you.
Oh, man.
Get the cell phone. We'll put the cell phone away.
No.
That's in the brain. Hopefully it was right. I'm going to get tweets tomorrow.
Pittsburgh Education coming
there
out.
There it is.
Matt Duda.
Only if it's right. Pittsburgh Education, only if it's right. So coming out of New Mexico, and as I mentioned there, you know, we've had Alan Branch come through here mm-hmm. in the past, obviously a big name player here for the Wolverines. Take us through the process. Have been committed to Texas. Coach Harbaugh gets the job here, and eventually you make the decision to come play football here. What led to that decision?
So, yeah, I was going to University of Texas for a while, and I was committed there under Charlie Strong, and I knew he was going to be leaving that program before too long, and it was kind of funny. I had decommitted from them, and I hadn't really made it public at all, and Coach Harbaugh called me. Not knowing that I decommitted, you kind of ask, you know, so what's your status with those guys? I said, well, you know, I actually decommitted silently. And so then he flew out and visited my house with Coach Fish at the time.
Yeah.
Played some mini golf. And then I flew out here 3 or 4 days after that. And I just fell in love with the campus and the facilities and committed on the visit.
What did you see when you first saw him on tape and then obviously going through the process?
So at the time, it was December 31st, I got hired. And within a couple of days on the job, realized that we needed a quarterback. And I started reaching out to all the top quarterbacks that were in that class. Zach Gentry was one of them. And other guys were Sam Darnold, who was committed to USC. Also, Ricky Town was also committed to USC at the time. So I thought, two of those quarterbacks don't both need to go to USC. So talked to both of them and also talked to Tommy Stevens from Indianapolis, who ended up going to Penn State. I talked to Drew Locke and I talked to Joe Burrows and Zach Gentry. And Zach ended up having interest. And as a matter of fact, the day we called him, I think he had told us that he was – had decommitted from Texas or was just about to. So literally the next day, Jed Fish and I flew out to Albuquerque, met with Zach and the family, played putt-putt golf. We were going to go to a movie. There was a good movie that was out, American Sniper.
Yeah, it was.
Was just out.
Yep.
And I'm like, hey, Jed, we should go see this new American Sniper movie. And he wanted to, and Zach wanted to, and your parents hadn't seen it either, but the –
I think it was sold out, wasn't it?
It was sold out.
Really just, it just came out. Yeah.
So you mean to tell me
and then Zach said, let's go. We'll go. There's a
you mean to tell me that
here.
A Gentry and Albuquerque couldn't find a way to get into a sold-out theater?
Hey, I didn't want to leverage it. Not that guy.
We had a nice round of putt-putt golf.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you like to see competitive nature. Get a guy out on a putt-putt course. You can see a little competitive nature. And the other side of a student-athlete in general, just to see their personality when you get out there.
The other thing we did was we bowled one time. Remember on mm-hmm. your official visit?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody throws a harder ball in bowling than Zach Gentry.
Does he give it one of those four bouncers down there? Boom!
No,
boom.
No, it's not a bouncer.
It's a real smooth.
It's not a bouncer. It has no arc or no curve.
Nope.
It's the straightest ball you've ever seen and the hardest, fast. I mean, the pins explode when he hits them right. He doesn't get a strike every time.
A lot of 7-10 splits when it comes through. But
let me ask you a question. You know, you come as a quarterback and you know, I know how recruiting goes, quarterback.
If you would have stayed another year, we would have had a tight end pass in for you. We would have got
okay. –
I always regret that we didn't throw a tight end pass.
Got him coming. You get that call, or how did it come about that move from quarterback to tight end in the program here in Michigan? How did that all come about, and what was the thought process?
Well, I mean, I think – it just came down to it was just better for my body type and better for me personally. I mean, Coach Harbaugh had me running some routes freshman year. I know we had I think it was BYU. We played against BYU freshman year. They had a tall receiver that looked exactly like me on film. And so the defense wanted me to run some routes for him to, you know, Coach Durkin wanted me to do that. And so I did it. And it felt pretty good. It looked pretty good. And so
they wanted him to do it again the next week. And the next week, he was really showing as a wide receiver. He's really.
Yeah. So just a
target.
Kind of just took off like that, you know, and happy about it now. You know, I mean, geez, over 6'8", you know, 265. There's not a lot of quarterbacks there.
Were you the tallest at the combine? Were you the tallest tight end that they had at the combine in Indianapolis? Or
yeah.
Someone taller?
I was the tallest tight end. I'm not sure about overall.
How much did you weigh when you came here as a quarterback?
Probably 225, 230.
And now you're what?
265.
Oh my goodness. fantastic, really fast. He was like a 4.5 40 type of guy coming out of high school, and so he's good. He made that transition we could tell he could be a receiver, no doubt, and then made the transition to tight end, and over the course of a year really improved as a blocker, and then the next year to the next year even better, and really, you know, did a great job here. I'm glad he made that transition. I think it's your best position going forward.
Yeah.
And had a little bump in the road there. I remember I was playing a charity golf tournament. The race car driver, Brad Kozlowski, had an event somewhere up in past Flint. And I'm leaving the place to drive back to Ann Arbor. And I got a message from Zach Gentry that to please give him a call. So I called him up, and I talked to my family. I feel like I'm going to leave Michigan. I'm going to transfer somewhere else. And he did not end up doing that.
talk him off the bridge.
Was able to talk him out of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, that was I look back at that now, and you know, that was really one of the biggest turning points in my life. Fortunate that you were able to get me to stay. But gosh, I couldn't even imagine. You know, it's crazy how different my path could have been. But yeah, there was a time where I was, you know, uncertain about it a little bit, and you know, I talked to Coach Harbaugh about it, and you know, he said, I really think you should stick it out, and you know, just keep doing what you're doing, and put on some weight, and you know, this is a position that you could play at the next level. You know, so went for it, and happy I did that. Jeez,
yeah, how was you? I mean, Zach, you're right there. You're right on the cusp. It's you know, maybe the depth chart had come out, and you might have been a little lower in the depth chart than you thought. And it's just, you will be playing this year. You will be playing in games. I don't know how much, but I know you will be playing. Just let's have a great listen.
I ended up starting 13 games.
Yeah, I can't guarantee you that you're going to start,
you know, but I know you're familiar with the portal.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing.
The portal thing.
What if the portal had been around?
What if the portal had been around there where you could have gone back to the room, and rather than call Jim, you could have typed in the portal and said, I'm available to transfer, and that goes out to every school in the United States of America, and you'd start to get the calls. I'm not a fan of the portal. We don't allow players to have that opportunity to talk with the coach. Yeah. Can you speak to that?
I'm not familiar with the portal, but it's funny because I tried to leave, wanted to in a sense for a little while, but now that I look back at it, I'm kind of against it, you know, because I mean, it's, if it hadn't been for me just you know, needing that motivation to just kind of put my nose down and work, you know, it worked out for me. I think it works out for a lot of people in the long run, but yeah, I don't think I'm a fan of the portal either. I mean, you see a different person on the portal like every day, you know. I mean, it's just easy to do.
Depends how your practice
like
goes. Your coach might get on you a little bit.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I'm going to try. I don't think there's ever very few players that ever play the game of football at some point in time. They don't like me. You know, I'm not going to get any playing time. I'm gonna transfer. But we've made it a little bit too easy, I think.
Yeah,
agree. Sure.
I had a conversation actually about you, I want to say a few months ago, with one of our assistant basketball coaches on the women's side, because Coach Yvonne Sanchez, of course, another New Mexico native, she actually said she came up to visit you. It was the Penn State game your freshman year. And so it's a great tie between you and Coach Sanchez. And was it her brother?
Yep.
Was your coach when you were in high school?
Yeah, so Yvonne's brother, Roy Sanchez, was my basketball coach all through high school. And my brother played for him. And my grandpa actually coached with him at El Dorado High for the last – couple of years of his coaching career. And so yeah, it's a great family connection. Love the Sanchez family. I'm glad they're out here and doing well.
Yeah, she loves being here, and she speaks obviously very highly of you. So great career here at U of M, making that transition from quarterback to tight end. We've had guys like that, like Jay Riemersma, had a great NFL career after transitioning from quarterback to tight end. So then you go into the process of getting ready for your career. So you go start training for the combine, you start training for the pro day. How different is that than training for football?
It's way different, because it's just focused on, you're going to bench, you're going to run a short shuttle, long shuttle, L drill, you know, 40-yard dash. And so, you know, you're not really thinking as much about football while you're training that. It's, you know, speed drills. And so I trained at the Exos facility in Frisco, Texas. And yeah, it was just geared towards eating the best food you can possibly eat, putting on the appropriate weight and getting the fastest times for 2 months heading into it.
Have you ever had a 2 month window of time where you were that hyper focused on one thing? No school, no anything else, just get ready for the combine, get ready for pro day?
Eliminating the school, yeah. I mean, I didn't even know what to do with my time. You know? I mean, it's like I would wake up, work out, eat again, work out again, eat, and sit in my apartment, you know, and go to bed. That's all I needed to do. But it was, it was a weird point in time where it was just kind of like nothing going on.
How would you rate your performance, both combining the combine and your pro day? How would you rate your performance and what you thought marrying that with your game film?
I was disappointed in some of the things that happened at the combine. Didn't feel like I represented certain aspects, like the 40 time were not as good as I'd consistently seen for the 2 months leading up to it. So I was able to correct that at the pro day. Had a really good time at the pro day. So
came back and ran a low 4.6s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think teams had me in the 4.66 or lower, somewhere around there. It was just the combine experience was a different animal. You know, I wouldn't change a thing about it because it's important and I got to meet a lot of people. But I think overall I did good. I mean, I did a really good job running routes and catching balls in pro day and redid some of the drills that I thought I could do better, got more bench reps and got better times on everything I redid. So I think it was a really good good showing for me.
That's a big drop. That's a big change to go from the 4.9 that you ran, whatever that number was, down into the 4.6 range. It goes to show that really is just a training for a very specific thing.
Oh, because yeah, for sure.
I think all of us knew, and Coach, you probably, whether you're watching on TV or get the number, you saw his 40 time come across at the combine. You're like, yeah, he's faster than that.
Yeah, I did. I did. As I said earlier, man, he's always been a very fast runner from high school to when he was here. So, something can happen. It's you get two shots at it, right? You get two shots at the 40 time, and when you're at the combine, and you know, guys that are really, really good and trained up, and you know, hit it exact. Their start, their their transition, their leg cycle and arm action, and then finish through the tape. I mean, those are all the differences.
What was your time at the combine? You recall?
I was a 4.60.
Whoa!
Actually, that was my pro day.
Whoa!
No,
that blows my mind.
I think that might have been. I might. You know what? I might not even have run at the combine. I had a broken. Had something wrong with me. I can't remember if I ran the 40 or not. I really don't remember. Is it on Google or something?
I'm going to see if I can find it. Yeah,
it's fastest, probably out there somewhere.
My fastest time was 4.6 flat electronic.
I say this with tongue in cheek now. I want a little humor. You know, I'm a little humor coming here. Did they run the 40 when you came?
Yeah,
out
they did. It was exactly the same. Literally, the combine was exactly the same when I was in 1986.
You did everything.
Yeah, I did all the throwing and.
It's an absolute mess too.
Yeah.
So much going on.
I think I got one rep on the bench press. that was not my strong.
You had more than one, right?
Yeah. I needed to.
So are you any teams showing interest, or where you think that it might be a possibility they would draft you? Or not that you have to mention, Mary, but you get talking to some teams now?
Yeah, for sure. I've had a couple private meetings, private workouts with some teams talking to a team in a couple of days. I'm going to fly out there and check out their facilities and stuff. So, there's been a good amount of teams that seem like they're interested, and hopefully they're still interested on draft day.
Just from a standpoint, just being here 4 years and being around you, you are an amazing guy. And I say that, walk down the hall and see you, and I get that smile on your face and an engaging personality. And I don't know where you're going to go and who you're going to be playing with. I know it's going to be someone, but I'm rooting for you.
Thank you. I am
on your team, and I want you to have a fantastic career. And
thank you.
And then on after that, you are an amazing guy.
Awesome. I echo that. And exclamation point stamped that as well. Zach's been a first class guy all the way here since he's been a freshman.
We'll send this tape around to the league as well.
Zach always hosted guys. He was always first in line. Incredible recruiter. Incredible guy. You hosted Cade McNamara on his visit.
Zach Charbonnet. Carlo Kemp.
Who are some other ones? You've probably had a lot.
Carlo Kemp. I know I have more that committed. It's leaving my mind now.
But this does go into kids recruiting kids.
Who was your host Big when time. You came here?
My host was... He was like a combination of like Pat Kugler and Chase Winovich.
That's pretty good.
Did they stay with you the whole time? Did they buy you something to eat? Did they disappear? They didn't disappear.
They stuck with me.
All right, good.
That was the great thing about Zach is that was never ever the case. It was always with Zach, always on time, feeding the guys, video games, whatever it was. He went with them, did an incredible job.
I think the greatest compliment that a coaching staff can pay to a player is to ask them to recruit. And they're very selective. A guy like you, I mean, somebody that they really want and they identify with your personality, the type of person you are, that's who they want. And every week with numbing repetition, right? Zach, what are you doing this week?
I call him every week. He's looking at me right now.
And you think, just give me a week off. I mean, give me some space.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was getting a lot of meals. It was nice.
Yeah, a lot of Roost Chris there. Yeah. Can we get you to come back?
Well, you know what? Yeah, you know, old Zach Gentry leaves, and there's some new things around. You know? Yeah, there's a new weigh-in system in the locker room.
Well, Zach, we wish you nothing but the best of luck. We know you're going to have a great day coming up later this month when you and the entire family, especially your grandfather, having a chance to see you get drafted and later on, of course, playing in the National Football League. So best of luck, and we look forward to watching you play on the gridiron at the professional level.
Great. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Go Blue Guy all the way, Zach Gentry.
Coming up next, hashtag Jack Talk here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
We really missed this last week. It's great to have Jack Talk back here in Attack Each Day of the Harbaugh's podcast. Now, Jack, we had a fun time with Ed Talk to have Ed Warner sit in your seat. And he tried to fill your very big shoes, but we mainly just talked offensive line. And it was a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, but there's nothing quite like Jack Talk here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. So I'm assuming you're going to regale us with more tales from Zach Gentry's hometown of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
The whole trip, about 3 weeks ago, John called up and he talked about he had to go to the NFL meetings in Arizona. And I just kind of threw out, you know, Arizona's where I'd like to go out and see a couple spring training games. He said, well, let's tell you, I'm going to make a trip. I got to stop at Albuquerque. Why don't you come to Baltimore? We'll fly out together. Never realizing what a fantastic experience it would be for me. The circle kind of closed a little bit during that trip. One of the top things that I've been able to experience with children. I say children. But the interesting thing is it flashed in my mind about halfway through the trip when I would take them somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'd take them recruiting or I'd take them to baseball game with Gates and Brown, and I'd talking to Gates, and I'd look around and I'd say, Gates, this is John and Jim. These are my sons. And then Gates would make a fuss over them, and then we'd get back to talking again. So many times on this trip, it was John. Mm-hmm. He was leading the way. He would come up to someone, he would talk, and he'd turn around to me. And he'd say, oh, by the way, this is my dad, Jack. And then we'd connect a little bit, and it just hit me. The circle has closed, and now I was in a position that they had been in when I traveled around.
And I'm going to guess, because I'm starting to do this a little bit with my dad too, especially around here where he doesn't know as many people, and I introduce him, and he used to always introduce me to people, obviously growing up, that you get a bigger kick out of being introduced.
No question.
Than you did introducing.
No question about it. I mean, put a smile on your face. And then the other thing was interesting about it is the generations – that we crossed. Sean McVay was there, and John was talking to Sean, and they were having a conversation, and he did the pivot. This is my dad, and Sean McVay, and we talked. And first thing, I know your grandfather, John McVay. He was a vice president for the 49ers with Bill Walsh, and head coach at the University of Dayton. I was at Moorhead. Job opened at Dayton. Wayne Fonts, former head coach at Detroit Lions, left Dayton to go to Iowa. Job was open. I spent an evening, 3 or 4 hours, with John McVay, his grandfather, applying for that job. And we had a chance to talk about John and about his grandfather. And then you run into LaFleur, Coach LaFleur,
Matt LaFleur, the Packers.
This
Kosoff talked to him. This is my dad. And then he brings up, well, you know, my dad coached at Central Michigan University when you were at Western Michigan, and you coached against each other. And bang, it hit me. That's his dad? And so then we had a chance to talk about his dad, who still lives in Mount Pleasant. The Grudens, didn't get a chance to meet them, but their dad, Jim, was a high school football coach at Galleon, Ohio. The Tigers, I believe, the Galleon, Ohio Tigers against Crestline, 6 miles apart. That was our rival. Didn't beat him in football very often, but we pounded him pretty good in basketball. But his dad was the head coach there after I left Crestline, won the state high school football championship at Galleon, and now he has two sons, Jay and John, that are head coaches in the NFL. Ran into Andy Reid, because I know Andy from Philadelphia, so John's talking and Andy sees, and we connect, because back about 1989 it was, we were in Texas, I think in San Antonio, at a coaches convention. Mm-hmm. And Jackie is, that's American Football Coaches Wives Association, and she was on the board. Came one day, she said, tonight, Jack, the wives need the coaches to come down and take stuffed animals and stick them in a bag. We're going to tie the bag up, and then tomorrow we're going to take them to the hospital. And they need our husbands to come to fill the bags with stuffed animals.
Labor.
And I'm at the convention, and all my friends are there, and I'm going to go stuff animals into a bag when we could be caught talking football and reminiscing about the season. But when wife calls, I'm gone, right? So about 7 o'clock that evening, we're down there, and I walk in, and there's all these wives, and no husbands came except one.
You.
And Andy Reid.
So the two of us,
we looked at each other and said, where are all the rest of the husbands? So obviously, two of us understood when the wife says we're going to do this, we're going to do it. And first thing he goes, you remember back in 1989, we were that. And so the memories just flowed through that whole thing. Of course, Vic Fangio, who coached with Jim at Stanford and San Francisco, he's now the head football coach for the Broncos. He was there, and we had a chance to visit Kyle Shanahan. And his dad, of course, he's talking about his dad, Mike, you know, and he was Eastern Illinois University graduate guy. We played at Western Kentucky, and so we're talking about then. And then I started to think, how many head coaches, there's 32 of them, and I could think of at least 6 or 7 or 8 that had fathers that had coached, you know, before. The head coaches now in the NFL who had fathers that had coached, you know, maybe head coaches and assistant coaches and guys that you had met. So it's crossing over those generations that had a tremendous impact on me in the visit.
I bet you a lot more of those coaches are the sons, or for that matter, grandsons of coaches, than maybe the average fan would realize, because a lot of those times it would kind of be like internally here, Ben McDaniels, right? People here know Ben McDaniels. They know his brother. But until we've talked about his dad being a legendary high school football coach, maybe you don't know a lot about high school football coaches in Ohio. So you may not know that he's part of a coaching family. And so there are probably examples like that, you know, or a coach I think a lot of people may not know, maybe in these parts they might, because it's Central Michigan, but maybe a lot of people around the country don't know that Matt LaFleur's dad was a coach at Central Michigan. Right. You know, it's different with you, I think, because especially, you know, when the John and Jim went against each other in the Super Bowl, that got a lot of attention. So obviously a lot of people know that, but there's something to be said about the quote unquote, the family business. And it doesn't always translate to either success but you grow up in the game.
Yeah.
And you love the most of these kids seem to love the game growing up in it, and they go on to play it. And why not make that natural transition after playing to, well, my dad was a coach. He loved being a coach. Why wouldn't I love being a coach like my dad did?
And I just mentioned Jason Garrett. Mm-hmm. His father was a coach, and brothers. I think he had at least one or two brothers that were also in the coaching profession. And the first time, you know, John did one of those pivots again, this is my dad. And Jason said, well, my dad, you know, was a coach. And then bang, you know, we're immediately talking about the old times and the different places that we were. So it was a fantastic experience.
Outside of Andy Reid, anybody had come up directly to you?
No.
We did see it. We saw Bill Belichick had a just. We were walking after the team photo with the coaches. John's walking out with Coach Belichick, and I had a chance to tell him, his father Steve. Mm-hmm. We were in a function in New York City a long time ago. Doit Perry was being inducted into the American Football Coaches Hall of Fame, and we were there for the event, and it was a big dinner, and you sit down, and we're assigned to a table, and across the table is Steve Belichick, and of course, Bill wasn't, where he is today, and I'm not sure exactly where he was in those times, but an engaging guy. I mean, an engaging guy. And in those days, they didn't exchange film. You didn't get film. What you had to do is send a scout out. And he would take a packet of paper, and he would sit somewhere all by himself. And he had to draw up an offense, draw up a defense, draw up the special teams. They would run a play. He had to see the whole play. How it was blocked, the action of the backfield, the routes that they ran in, on pass plays. He had to see it all, and he was the best. Steve Belichick was the best at coming back and being able to put an offense, a defense on the board as if he had studied the film for hours upon hours upon hours, and that's a tremendous talent. And we had a chance to share that a little bit in our discussion at that dinner that night, and then for Bill and I, as I was at that dinner with your father, and what a fantastic scout he was, and we connected through that connection.
Of course, Bill gave a great recommendation to the Modell family as well a bunch of years ago now on behalf of John that helped land him with that job. Bill's great at recommendations. Don Brown was a recommendation, right, Bill? Coach Herbert. So we've had a few not Coach Herbert, our doctor came from New England. Strength and conditioning doctors, yeah. They all kind of run together. Dave. But Dave came from New England. That was a recommendation guy. I'm going to guess, if I actually did the research, that it's at least half of the head coaches in the NFL. I'm going to bet it's at least half of them that have, whether it's dad or grandfather, or maybe even it's like an uncle, but there's the direct family tie in the coaching business. I mean, it helps that there's two Grudens coaching at the same time, so right. That's two out of the 32 right there. But I bet you it's half. Now that if you start going through and naming all, I bet you we could find at least half that are part of a family. And a couple of years ago, it would have been more because Chuck Pagano, obviously, part of a family of coaches as well.
And then you'd find it like high school coaches. And I don't know the connections with most of that had connections with high school coaches, but many of them, I'm sure, had been coaches as well. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys mentioned, I can't remember which one of those head coaches mentioned about 8 years old, 9 years old, sitting around the table and talking about this, players that were team players, players that weren't, disciplinary things you had to do, and how that impacted you and developed the fact that you wanted to be a coach. You wanted to be in that situation, and they went on to be coaches, and I certainly agree with that. I got to tell you this one story, though. We were in Albuquerque, and we met the mayor of Albuquerque. His name is Tim Keller. And he got up to speak at a leadership symposium, and just an interesting guy and a tremendous mayor of Albuquerque. But he told a story that he had played some high school football and he played college football. And now he's there, and they have the Duke City Gladiators, the arena football team, the second level arena football team. And a year ago, Dominic Bramante was the head football coach, won the championship last year of their league, and he was a promotion or whatever. He ran out of quarterbacks. He had a couple injuries, so he asked the mayor, who's 41 years old, to be the quarterback for the Duke City Gladiators. And the mayor's up telling the story, and so he dresses up, and sure enough, somebody gets banged up, and he has to go in the game. Well, the first half, he throws two touchdown passes in the game. He's got his team in the lead. And he's walking to the locker room, and some of the players from the other team came over and said, "Are you the mayor of this town?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm the mayor." And they go, "The mayor out there?" So then he walks by the locker room, and he hears the opposing coach saying, "You no good guy. This is the mayor. He's 41 years old. He's thrown two touchdowns. What the hell kind of team do I have here? You got..." And he's just going on and on. He says, "I felt kind of bad. That, a great performance, but I was being berated by the coach because I was the mayor and I was 41 years old." He went out to say, second half didn't go quite as well. He said three interceptions, but we found out two. And then he went on to talk about that the two interceptions really weren't in-play interceptions. End of the game, they were behind. They were two Hail Marys. He didn't want anyone to think that he had thrown two uncontested type of interceptions. But just a fantastic trip and some great stories.
Yeah, you sounds like you had a great time. And now you're back here in town in time for the weather's turning again, thank goodness. And on Saturday, we're going to have an open practice. So I'm just curious, because we know that this open practice on Saturday is it's helmets and it's no pads. They're going to have the full padded practice at the stadium for the spring game on the 13th. So we can talk about that after the spring game coming up. Because next week on the podcast, we're going to have a kind of a collection of some of our Lucky Sports Parents features talking about, you know, why these kids chose Michigan, that kind of thing. But this coming Saturday, open practice. So what does a fan see? What can a fan glean from a practice? We get one out of 15, or really two if you include the spring game. We get to see one helmets and, you know, shorts practice. It's really hard for a fan to know what to watch, what to see, what they can glean from that. So you've seen some practices already. You obviously know what practices look like in general. What can a fan glean from a helmets and no pads practice?
Well, here's what I think. This is one of my favorite days. You know, the spring game, when families can come out and see the University of Michigan fan day, I think is a fantastic thing. And I've seen it more over these last two or three years. We didn't have it last year because of the weather, but the year before that, you can bring out your kids. You got two or three or four kids and a wife. You can come to the game, come to the practice. You get into the stadium and move around. You get a chance to see the players. You get to see the maze. You get to see the blue. You get to see the excitement of the crowd. Hopefully you get to interact a little bit with the players. And for me, I just walk around and I just enjoy. It reminds me of the 70s when the prices of tickets weren't quite as high and dad could bring daughters and sons and come to the game, walk around the stadium before the game and just kind of intermingle with other Michigan fans, get into the stadium. And I'm sure they'll have a little fight song, little M Go Blue in there and the big scoreboard. And then then the next part is just watching drills, you know, catching the ball, throwing the ball, some line blocking type drills. But just an hour and a half, 2 hours of just experiencing Michigan football as a family. And then they develop a love for the University of Michigan and for football. And, you know, there'll be doctors, there'll be lawyers that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old now, down the road, that this is where they want to come. This is where they want to come to school, and they develop a love and passion for Michigan football and the University of Michigan.
I have said many times, I've been quoted as saying, any reason to go to the Big House is a good reason to go to the Big House. And in, obviously coming up on Saturday, an opportunity to check out the players a little bit, and then the following Saturday. So this Saturday on the 6th, 2:15, and then on April 13th, the spring game is at 5 p.m. So opportunity to for both of those opportunities for fans to go out to the stadium. And again, there's never a bad reason to go to Michigan
Stadium. And just for me personally, Jackie and I will be walking around the stadium, and please say hello and introduce us to your youngsters, and so we can interact with them and let them know how proud we are to have them here at Michigan and in the stadium.
Great to have you back, Jack.
Thanks. So nice to be back.
A reminder, you can contact us on Twitter at AED Podcast or by using hashtag Jack Talk. Follow us, favorite us, and subscribe to us on podcast1.com and the Podcast One app. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We want to thank our guest, Zach Gentry. We want to thank Podcast One and our sponsor, TrueCar. Have a great week, everybody, and keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at podcast1.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.